Welcome to Will Listen, the podcast of South Carolina Women in Leadership. I'm Sarah Ballard. Each month, we bring you a new episode that speaks to informing, inspiring, and involving talented women with diverse and inclusive perspectives to step into leadership roles at every level. This month, I talked with South Carolina Senator Mia McLeod and South Carolina Representative Jenny Horn about redistricting at the legislative level, how changes in legislative districts impact citizens, and how they're represented. Jenny Anderson Horn is a former Republican member of the South Carolina House of Representatives, representing District 94 from 2008 to 2016. In a passionate speech on the House floor after the 2015 murder of 9 Black members of a Bible study at a Charleston church, Horn advocated for removal of the Confederate battle flag from South Carolina State House grounds, where it had flown since 1962. The speech is credited with helping to change the course of the debate and led to the vote to remove the flag. Jenny is from Somerville, South Carolina. Mia S. McLeod is a Democratic member of the South Carolina State Senate, serving District 22 since 2017. On her election, she was the first woman and first African American to win her Senate seat. She previously served as representative of District 79 in the South Carolina State House from 2011 to 2016. Mia is from Bennettsville and now resides in Northeast Columbia. This interview was recorded on May 14, 2021, prior to Senator McLeod's public announcement of her candidacy for governor of South Carolina.
Welcome and thank you, Mia and Jenny, for joining us tonight. We're going to talk about redistricting, about legislative redistricting. The new district lines are going to be drawn based on the 2020 census numbers that are expected out in September. And those lines can be drawn intentionally to increase or decrease voters' power based on your political party or other factors, race, income, et cetera. And so South Carolina Women in Leadership wanted you to come on tonight and talk to us about fair and transparent voting, about your experiences with legislative redistricting in the past. So before we get started, I'm going to start with Jenny Horn. What motivated you to go into public service? Let's get to know each other a little bit and before we get into all the nitty gritty.
Well, I love serving people, and that's what motivated me to run for elected office. And I was very, naive about what it would entail, but serving in the House was the highest honor of my life.
Wonderful. Mia, tell us a little bit about what motivated you to go into public service and obviously to, you know, continue to seek higher and higher office.
Well, I knew what great representation looked like and felt like because I had an amazing representative in Anton Gunn. When he was appointed by President Obama to go and head up Health and Human Services, I knew that we were going to lose him in that seat. So I was tasked with helping him to find someone who cared about the community. And my boys were a lot younger then. And of course, I was very involved in the community, but had no plans and no desire to run for office. But after helping him look and not really coming up with anyone that we felt would continue the things that he had done, I jumped in and didn't really give it much thought, which was probably a good thing because had I a little bit more time to think about it, I may not have. But that is really what got me started in politics. I'd always worked in and around state government, and I knew it was dysfunctional, and I just didn't realize how dysfunctional it really was until I was elected in 2010.
Well, I think that that's a perfect segue into talking about the nuts and bolts of redistricting. So Jenny, you were a House member in 2010. That was the last time that the census was completed and that we redistricted. And what does that look like at a legislative level? What's considered in the decision-making process?
So when we redistricted in 2010, I was on the election law subcommittee of the House. And we held four or five public hearings throughout the state so that the members of the public could have an opportunity to come in and talk about, you know, their districts. But, you know, we were operating under the Civil Rights Act of 1965, and this redistricting is not going to be that way. So now the redistricting is not going to be subject to federal control. But we redistricted based on the census data. And so I don't know what the census data is showing right now, but I suspect because of the pandemic, we're totally underrepresented. So I think it could be very interesting.
Mia, how do you feel like redistricting impacts the power of your constituents? How do you work with constituents who have concerns about redistricting or how much their vote is or isn't going to count because of the way that the districts are drawn?
I know that redistricting will impact the power of my constituents tremendously because I was a freshman in the House. And when I became a part of the redistricting process for the first time, or I shouldn't say part of the process, I was more subjected to the process the first time. And I was eager to learn about redistricting and how it would impact my constituents and my community. But I just had no idea. What I saw was an effort by the Republican majority to create a permanent stronghold, Republican stronghold in the state, and to divide our districts based on race. And that concerned me because I had just won in a swing district and I was really excited about that and just the diversity. I know that diversity is key. And so when I was able to, you know, kind of see how that process really worked or could have worked versus how it did work, I was really disheartened because the Republican majority at that time, and that was in 2011, my first year in the House, that my district was a swing district, as I said at that time. But what they did was they almost wrote me out of my own district. And what I mean by that is they drew the line, I mean, literally like right behind my house. So it brought another Democrat into my community. And there was this big disconnect. And voters weren't really engaged by my colleagues about the process. They didn't know a whole lot about the process. So as I learned, I tried to inform my constituents and engage them. I had town halls with former Representative James Smith and former U.S. Attorney Reggie Lloyd. You know, we had trouble just getting people to come out and to hear about what that process entailed. They should have taken me out of maybe Kershaw because that seemed to be the way my district was trending. But instead of letting it evolve naturally, they bumped up my Black voting population by, oh gosh, I think when I won the seat, I was around 34% in terms of my Black voting population, which is you know, I think reasonable. And when we did that, the redistricting process, the Republican majority packed my district with Black voters. And what some of my colleagues didn't understand and what the general public wasn't informed of, informed enough to understand, is that that was intentional. That was so that the next time, well, in the not too distant future after that, and we're seeing it now, white Democrats would become almost extinct. And although, you know, some of my colleagues thought that it would create a safer district for them as incumbents, I'm not interested in a safe district. I think competition is good. And I also appreciate now the diversity of my district. So I was the only Democratic caucus member to fight it that year. And I was floored by that because of the way the lines were drawn. Every time a candidate, the goal was so that every time a voter goes into the voting booth to and sees a D by a candidate's name, they will know that that person is Black. And every time they see an R by a candidate's name, they'll know that that person is white. And I can't begin to tell you how wrong that is on so many levels, but what it also does is it marginalizes the voices of the minority. And they are well on their way to doing that permanently now because they have a supermajority in both chambers. And it's really scary.
When my district was redrawn, they took out minority voters out of my district. And my minority voters were upset.
Right.
Because they did not view this as a Republican Democratic district. They wanted to have their ability to call me on the phone and ask me for issues that related to their issues. And I wasn't happy about losing my minority population in my district, but it was because another person needed minorities to keep him in office. And I was like, I'm fine with my district. Don't redraw my district. I know my people. I don't care whether they're Democrats, Republicans. It doesn't matter to me. They feel very comfortable with having me as their representative because they knew if they called me on the phone and they needed something that I would be responsive. Right. So it kind of politicized everything. And then when voting time came around, they were upset that I wasn't on their ballot.
I was just about to say that. Same here, Jenny.
They were.
And that's when people got engaged because they understood it then.
And it wasn't a Democrat Republican thing. It was a here's my House member. I want to be able to call her and ask her to do work for me. And they wanted to be able to vote for me regardless of whether they were Democrats or Republican, because even if they were African American, they still associated with my candidacy, and they wanted to make sure they didn't like being drawn out of my district, basically.
Right. Same here. And I'm sure we've got colleagues who feel, you know, who went through that too. But yeah, I had so many people who, even though they, you know, not all of them, some came to the town halls, but, you know, a lot of folks didn't. And on election day, my phone was blowing up because people were like, what happened? You're not on my ballot. And, you know, I sent something to them in writing, but there's just no way to reach all of the people who were, you know, displaced or purposely, you know, placed in somebody else's district. And that was my introduction to redistricting. So I have introduced bills and co-sponsored bills since I was in the House. Of course, none of them have seen the light of day. Right. Most recently, now that I'm in the Senate, I co-sponsored a bill with our minority leader at that time, who was Nikki Setzler, so that an independent commission could draw our districts, because it makes no sense. And it's, I mean, it's borderline criminal that we as elected officials, be it House members, Senate members, get to choose our voters, and they don't get to choose us. It should be, you know, it should be the reverse. So I am really concerned about what this process will look like. Yeah. Because it's my experience on the front end of it, my freshman year in the House was not a good one.
Well, and I agree with you. And I think that you and I both agree that we do not pigeonhole our constituents.
That's
it,
right.
Doesn't matter whether they're Democrats, Republicans, independents, or whatever. When you get elected, you represent the entire district.
That's right.
And they want to know.
Somebody will fight for them. And that's right.
To know who their representative is. And they want to have their phone numbers. And if they've got a problem, they want to call us. It doesn't matter whether we're Democrats or Republicans. The people that live closest to us want to be in our district regardless.
Right.
And I think the disappointment of the redistricting is the manipulation of the districts. And then the people who used to vote for us can't vote for us anymore.
Right.
They bring people in, like into my district, for example. They brought a representative who had no real connection to Richland County into Richland County. So the voters had no connection to her. She had no connection to them. And so I'm sure Jenny did this too. I still continue to, you know, talk with them and communicate with them and explain things to them. Or when they had issues, they called me, because I live within walking distance of some of them. And the representative that they brought into Richland County lived in Fairfield County. So even even some of the issues that we were connected around and all cared about, you know, they may not have been a priority for her, just simply because her district and where she lived was very different from Richland County. So
well,
in the rural community.
And the same thing happened with me in the inverse, if you will. I had Democratic voters that wanted me to be their representative, and they were disappointed when they went to the polls and they couldn't vote for me.
Right.
So,
I think that's another question that I'd like to pose. How do we help people understand before it's too late, before you show up at the polling place on the day of the election and find out that the person that was previously on the ballot has been redistricted out and is no longer on the ballot? You talked about town halls. How else can we help people understand?
I think we have to start early, like now, which is why I was really excited about doing this. It's never too early. I didn't know what I didn't know in 2011, but now I'm at least a lot wiser about, you know, what I went through in 2011, but I'm still pretty naive about what that process is like on the Senate side, because I wasn't in the Senate then. So there are going to be some things that are going to be new to me even now, but I understand that what they did in 2011 was a part of their national strategy, the Republican majority's national strategy. So they hit all the southern states with that same strategy. And it's still working. We see that it has really come to fruition in a lot of these races that we just lost 3 Senate seats in the Senate. And I think the House may have lost even more than that this last time, and that is in large part because that strategy is still in play. And so, you know, I don't think it's ever too early to start in educating and informing voters about what to expect, because there are things that they should know that I'm not sure they knew in 2011. I know I didn't know as an elected, as a new elected official and as a voter. So I would just say the earlier we can start to engage and enlighten our constituents and community members about that process and what to expect and how to voice their concerns on the front end.
They have, the United States Supreme Court has invalidated the Voting Rights Act. So there is no supervision whatsoever, federal supervision over redistricting. The numbers that came in from the census, I think, are low for South Carolina. They said we had a 9% growth. I don't believe that at all. I think that the growth is greater than 9%. It's because of the pandemic and because of the stigma associated with responding to the census that we don't have accurate, census numbers. And so we're not picking up another congressional seat. We're going to have to redo districts based upon whatever, 73,500 in a House district. There are numbers that the lines are going to have to be redrawn, and there's very little public import on what that involves. So if people want to participate in the process, they're going to have to attend whatever meeting we have in Charleston, Greenville, Columbia, just fill in the blanks. But there is no federal oversight now. And I will remind you that the last redistricting that we had, the Justice Department brought a lawsuit. And there were challenges to that. So, it's the new redistricting is not going to be like the old redistricting. And it's bad because we have no federal oversight. We have inaccurate numbers. And unless the people pay attention to what we're doing, that there is no accountability.
And Mia, can you speak to what are the ways that redistricting affects people's everyday lives? Certainly you show up at the polling place and, you're the person that you thought was going to be on the ballot may not be on the ballot. But after Election Day, how does redistricting change, what you see in your community on a day-to-day basis?
Well, I think where the major changes come in are when voters are marginalized by that process, then we get people, I'll say, on the fringes who get elected, and the people that they represent, only a very small percentage of that electorate is represented. They get to then pander to their base and have a safe district because of the way it's drawn. And so the people who are marginalized by that can voice their concerns and call their legislators and do whatever is considered fair and reasonable and, normal. But at the end of the day, the lines are drawn so that regardless of how many people are upset by what these legislators are doing or not doing, whether they feel like they're being heard, it's not as easy if the lines are drawn, a certain way. It's not as easy for them to say, well, I don't like what you're about. I don't like who you are. Your vision and your values are not in alignment with mine. you've got legislators now who can just laugh at that because they're like, oh, okay, well, I hate you don't like it, but the lines are already drawn. So, you know, you've got people who will not be able to have a voice in their government when those lines are drawn to suit the incumbent's political agenda, as opposed to being about, you know, truly representing the voices of their constituents.
Sure. Jenny, you know, you mentioned that redistricting is really beyond any just one legislator. And so I don't want people to leave listening to this conversation feeling like it's going to happen and there's nothing that we can do about it. We just have to wait and deal with the consequences. What can someone from, you know, one of your constituents from your district, what can we actually do? I mean, you can contact your legislator, but beyond that, what can we do to make sure that we don't get there in the first place, that we don't let this happen so that people are marginalized?
Well, I think that you need to contact your representative, regardless of what district you're in, and you need to pay attention to the mapping. That, you know, we go into the map room when we redistrict these places, when we redistrict things, and you need to ask to know, okay, who is going to be my new representative, and how are you drawing the maps? When the districts are redrawn, the real work happens in the map room, and everybody needs to understand that. And you have to call your senator, call your house member and say, all right, who's going to be my representative? Because, you know, it's not necessarily going to be the person that they elected and the person that they voted for. So I think it's very important for people to be curious about the process.
Excellent. Well, thank you both so much. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your insight and the experience that you have with redistricting. And so before we move on and say goodbye this evening, I'd like to see what advice you might give someone who is thinking about running for office or who has decided to run for office, both as a woman, both in the context of, you know, what we've talked about with redistricting and with, you know, marginalized communities. What would you tell someone to think about, or, you know, a little piece of wisdom for them?
I would simply tell them to do it, even if they have to do it afraid. I think women, most of us overthink. And that's why I said at the beginning that I'm glad I didn't have a whole lot of time to think. We think, oh, you know, I haven't done anything politically. I need to get this degree first. My kids need to be a little bit older first. I need to get a little more experience. I need to get my name out there, maybe run for something, you know, else first. None of that. I would encourage anyone who has a heart for public service to jump in and not to give it. You know, of course you need to be prepared because it is a rude awakening. It's not something that you can get into lightly or think that it's not going to impact your whole life. It will. So there are some preparations that need to be made and some things that we as women have to think about. Of course, and those of us who are moms, I mean, we've all got different considerations and some of the same considerations. So I would just say, do it, do it, do it. We need more women in public office at every level of government. And I would encourage them to serve where they are. Like it doesn't mean that you won't, you know, eventually run for this seat or that seat. But there's so many things that can be done even now as you are beginning to become more engaged and more interested in serving, whether it's the SIC at your kid's school or the PTO or wherever you see a need. And that will help you develop, the passion that'll show you where your passions are when you see things that are unfair and unjust and things that could easily be improved if they had more women in the arena. I serve alongside three amazing women in the South Carolina Senate, but there was a time and four women in the Senate is historic, which is sad for us, for our state. But there was a time when there were no women in the Senate. So although we are making history every day, there's so much more history to be made. And I'm excited when women tell me that they are interested in running. I keep it real. I tell them, you know, exactly what my experience has been. It doesn't mean that their experience will be the same. But I do encourage those who have a heart for public service to jump in and run.
The absence of women in the room when we're discussing policy has a detrimental effect on the population. And I think we need to understand that when we're talking about care for aging parents, when we're talking about taking care of special needs children, when we're talking about all the issues that women deal with every day, and now with homeschooling that everybody's been doing, I mean, and that women have had to step out of the labor force to do this. And if we don't have women in the legislature helping us decide issues that directly affect our parents, our children, our healthcare, then we're being sorely misrepresented. So I think it's very important for women, whether they're Republicans, Democrats, Independents, it doesn't matter. We need more women to get involved in the political process. You know, we just need more women involved in the process.
Well, thank you both so much for your service. Thank you so much for being part of this conversation and helping folks understand the importance of legislative redistricting so that they can be aware, so that they can make their voice heard by contacting their legislators. We really appreciate your insights. And again, thank you for your service and thanks for being with us tonight.
Well, thank you so much.
New legislative district lines will be drawn based on the final 2020 census numbers expected to be released in mid-August of this year. Those lines can be drawn to intentionally increase or decrease voters' power based solely on their political party or other factors like race and income. We hope that Senator McLeod and Representative Horn's perspective as legislators, as well as incumbent candidates whose districts were redrawn following the 2010 census, will encourage you to contact your legislators to advocate for fairness and transparency in the decision-making process. Visit scwomenlead.net for the latest information about redistricting, stay tuned to our social media channels at scwomenlead, and subscribe to our mailing list to receive redistricting news and fair voting alerts in your inbox. If you're thinking of running for office, applying for an appointed state or local board or commission, supporting others running for office, rising up the ranks professionally, or developing leadership skills to create change within your local community, South Carolina Women in Leadership Lean In Circles of Women challenge and champion women in attaining their leadership goals. Circles of Women are geographic, professional, or issue-based groups of women from all backgrounds who come together to network, learn, mentor, and support each other. We're taking what we've seen on the ground, that many women want to serve and make a positive impact in their communities, but are unsure about how to get started or what opportunities are available, and partnering with Lean In to help women overcome barriers to leadership by reaching, supporting, training, and building networks from where they are in their leadership journey. Learn more about joining a circle at scwomenlead.net. Thank you very much for listening. We'll Listen is brought to you by South Carolina Women in Leadership. Please share your comments about this episode on social media at scwomenlead. This episode was produced by Shannon Ivy with the What She Said Project. That's We'll Listen for this month. I'm Sarah Ballard. Please join us again next month.